It's Celtics coverage on clnsradio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh, Hayward. Hayward lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free 347-215-7771. It's Celtics coverage on clnsradio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh, Hayward. Hayward lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll-free 347-215-7771.
I think the goal tonight is going to be to find a playoff loss that was worse than that one for the Celtics. It was an embarrassment tonight. 116-92. There are multiple reasons that this is. I've been watching the Celtics for about 10 years. I've been covering them for a few, and I don't remember any loss worse than this. There was a lid on the bucket all night long. At one point, their field goal percentage was 10.5%, and that was 13 minutes into this. And moment after moment that went by, I wondered if it just could get any worse, and it did. Every single step of the way, something would go wrong for the Celtics, a turnover, a miss. Greg Monroe flip shot around the net, and there were many in this one. He, even at a 15-12 night, was not looking very spry out there and was tortured by Milwaukee's rim protection. So I'm probably going to hear from you tonight on the call line, 347-215-7771, that it doesn't matter, it's just one game. But Milwaukee found themselves tonight. I was just talking after game two about how they were lost through those first two games. Well, plug in Malcolm Brogdon at point guard, put Thon Maker in there, see him get success, and then keep running him. I wasn't sure they were going to do that, and they did. And encouraging Jabari Parker, getting him back involved, running him more minutes than they had been previously. All that stuff played into the outcome tonight. Now, of course, horrid offense by the Celtics did too. We got into that period where they're getting the good shots, they're getting the decent looks, and they are just not going. And a rim protector will do that for you. I will argue tonight that Thon Maker has changed the series out of nowhere. 24 minutes. I think in his first 6 or 7, he had 4 blocks and ends the night with 5. He got into Al Horford's head early, later Greg Monroe's, and those big lineups that the Celtics were running and then crushing them with through games 1 and 2 weren't looking so hot. So with me tonight is Taylor McLeod and Andrew Rubino. Taylor,
sir.
What more than anything went wrong tonight?
Well, look at the numbers. The Celtics shot 40% from the field, Milwaukee shot 57%. Celtics shot 33% from 3. Milwaukee shot 48.5. But the biggest thing for me, outside of no player having a plus-minus in the positive for the Celtics, is turnovers. The Celtics had 18. Milwaukee had 9. So the Celtics doubled up Milwaukee's turnovers. Terry Rozier was responsible for, it felt like, a lot of those. Right here. Yeah, he had 5, and then Monroe had 5. Marcus Morris had 4. They're just giving the Bucks so many extra possessions, and then, you know, a team down 2-0 goes back home, has the home crowd behind them, don't want to go down 3-0. You know, they're going to come out charged up. They're going to come out, you know, firing on all cylinders. And the Celtics just didn't respond. I'm a little bit disappointed in Brad Stevens tonight. We'll get into that later. But the biggest thing for me was turnovers.
Some Brad Stevens anger right off the bat. And, of course, Andrew Rubino has a perspective that we're going to hear right now.
Yeah, guys, I would say my biggest thing is the second half, you wanted to see the Celtics come out and do something different, right? And honestly, midway through the third quarter, I was like, you know what? Like, this is under 20. This is under 15. This is potentially going to go the other way. This is going to be that Rockets game in late December, December 28th. I'll never forget the date when they came back from 26. That's kind of the vibe I got. And then Jabari Parker had an answer. All of a sudden, a guy who's been calling his own – wanted to call his own name all series, and interim coach of the Bucks didn't do it, and he finally gave Parker some run. And guess what? He had a huge moment there in the third quarter. He had back-to-back buckets and then a three-pointer. And then I would say even in the fourth, right at the beginning of the fourth quarter, Giannis got his fifth foul, and then Thon Maker and Chris Middleton each hit threes, and then Middleton had kind of that spur of points. So each time the Celtics kind of had a little bit of light, and the Bucks did something a little bit out of character for the game, the Bucks honestly answered, and it was pretty impressive. So the Bucks earned this one big time tonight.
Tonight is how you would have expected the Bucks to function in an ideal world, using all the length they have on that team. When Jason Kidd got there, his big plan was to make the longest team ever and run opponents into the ground with that. And that's exactly what they did tonight. Thing going on where every single shot they were taking, it was like something was lurking. You had not only Maker swallowing up the middle and taking that out of the game for the Celtics, which of course takes Horford out, Monroe out, Larkin out, even Rozier to some degree. He was having a lot of trouble finding some penetration, and I think that has been a big part of his renaissance late in this year. And rim protection is a powerful thing. It's a powerful, powerful thing. Look at that Cavs Pacers series that the Cavs might lose. If you want to look at some positive tonight, I guess you can lean on that. The Celtics are still ahead in this series and the Cavaliers are down. But I think tonight was a marking point in the series, guys. I think the Bucks found something. They made well-needed adjustments. But, you know, you're asking where the Celtics adjustments were. Their adjustment is their guys that are out there have to play better, because they don't have anybody they can turn to off the bench. They're not going to seriously go to Yabusele, even though they did in game two. No one off their bench is saving them. They might sustain the success of the starters, but they don't have a single player on their bench that is going to shift this series. Now, Marcus Smart's a different story, but he's not there yet.
See, this is my thing, though, Bobby, is I get that the Bucks looked really good tonight, but at the same time, when Malcolm Brogdon, and it was Brogdon, I wrote it down, Brogdon, I know, Maker, and then it was Dellavedova. They hit back-to-back-to-back threes, or and maybe they weren't three in a row, but they were all to end the half in the last 2 minutes. When that happens to me, you kind of just have to sit there and laugh and be like, okay, this is a game, whoever you're rooting for, if you're just a fan, you can tell it's just the Bucks night. I don't know if the Bucks necessarily found anything. I think Jabari Parker and Thon Maker coming alive should scare Celtics fans a little bit. But I don't know if you can totally say that this was out of the realm of the possibility for the Celtics to come out and have a really good game four, because you know Brad Stevens is going to make adjustments. You saw Jaylen Brown had some spurts of energy. And for everybody complaining about Al Horford all year and saying, oh, he doesn't do anything, why are we paying him all this money? He has found a different type of energy in this playoffs, and he's shown that he kind of conserves his energy maybe a little bit in the regular season. He looked good tonight. I think he had some really good plays, and especially in that first quarter, he wasn't getting any calls. The refs were blatantly like going against Horford. There was that one sequence where he got hit by Bledsoe, came down the other end and got called for a foul. It was just a kind of weird sequence. They were kind of out. The refs were kind of out against Horford tonight. Horford played well. So, Bobby, I personally think that the Celtics can easily switch it around and retake control of the series and potentially steal game four in Milwaukee on Sunday, because of the way the Bucks, the plays they made tonight, they weren't things that seemed sustainable. Like Thon Maker hitting that many threes, going 3 for 4 from three-point land, like, come on now. Is he really going to do that again on Sunday? Like, I don't think so. Is Jabari Parker going to get that many open looks at the basket? I want to say out of Jabari Parker's 7 field goals, he had 2 dunks in a really easy layup, because the Celtics defense was atrocious tonight. Do you think the Celtics defense is going to be that bad on Sunday? I don't know. So that's you guys can kind of debate that, but that's kind of my take. I don't know if there's going to be another game that lopsided in the Bucks' favor come the rest of the series.
Game 2, the Bucks played Thon Maker 1 minute. Game 1, he only received
0.
Yeah, he got a hearty 0. That's I don't know how you don't look at that and say that could change the series. Get Tony Snell out of there. Get Jason Terry out of there. Insert Malcolm Brogdon. Get John Henson out of there. No less. 37 minutes in game one, and he stinks. Like, he got exposed.
Well, Henson,
as an
Henson,
awful
well, yeah, Henson,
player.
Henson obviously was too hurt too tonight, but yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, but his absence said a lot. You know, you might even want to move Snell and make him the starting lineup the way that looked tonight. Or, you know, Tyler Zeller can do his thing, but nevertheless, Taylor, I don't know. I don't feel great. Bino seems optimistic. Where are you?
It would be hard for me not to be optimistic just because of the entire way it's gone. You know, whenever adversity strikes, the Celtics seem to respond in a pretty positive way. And, you know, they're up 2-1, seven-game series. You know, even if they lose the next one, they go home tied. And, the Garden environment is electric. And because it's pretty much a bench unit starting for the Celtics right now, it feeds off that energy a lot. So I'm not worried necessarily for the entire series. But the addition of Maker and Parker finding his groove, that both of those things obviously worry me. Parker more so than Maker, because I don't think Maker's going to get five blocks and hit four threes again on Sunday.
Thank you. That's my point. Yeah, that's a great point, Taylor, that Parker is more sustainable potentially to come alive, but continue on.
Hell yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
they had 112 points tonight, and a lot of that was dumped on them through the toilet part of the game, you know, the garbage part of the game.
A lot of
Maker's threes were, you know, up 18, 20 anyway. I think where the Celtics fell off in this game, and what made me say in the first quarter, all right, there's no way this is going to swing the other way, is that they could not find the bucket. Anybody on the team. Monroe started 0-4. Horford started 0-4. They didn't have the touch around the rim, and that was even before Maker went in. So maybe it isn't him, but if it is, it's not because of his offense. I'm not looking at those threes and saying, ooh, he's going to shoot threes now all of a sudden, but he's going to at least give you something on offense. I saw some drives and kicks that looked really good from him. He also had the worst 3-foot jumper I've ever seen, that Parker splashback, but he's just a way better option in there than anything else they were getting before, and that inherently just boosts their chances.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and I agree 100% with that. What like I said, I'm more worried about Jabari Parker anyways, because, you know, even though it was 2014, he was still the number two pick in the draft. He's still a very talented player. And even though, you know, like Haralabah Vulgaris tonight tweets out that he reminds him of Jeff Green, like, he's super athletic. He's a great slasher. And he showed tonight that obviously he understands that if he wants to get the minutes he desires, he has to produce. So I wouldn't be surprised to see more of a sustained production from Parker. Do I think the Celtics will make adjustments for game four? Of course. Brad Stevens is known for adjustments. It'll be difficult to deal with that because, like you said, to lead off the show, when Jason Kidd's plan was always to make this super long, super athletic team that just suffocates the other team. Obviously, Kidd's defense and Prunty's defense have been suspect at best, but that length is undeniable, and you saw it with Maker tonight, just babying everybody who came in the paint. So, you know, getting back to the first question you asked me, am I optimistic or where am I, you know, mood-wise on this series and on this game? Obviously, I don't feel great about the game. I'm somewhat optimistic about the series. It's all pretty confusing because I didn't expect this kind of loss tonight, but from the first quarter on, I kind of just accepted that it wasn't Celtics night and it's time to move forward.
I felt that way too. It just had everything you looked at, whether it was Monroe rolling one out and then Maker splashing a three, just some of the ridiculous plays, the turnovers, just how laughable they were.
From
the very beginning, even that Rozier dribbled the paint in the opening sequence, he had played 70 minutes before that without a turnover, and now he's dribbling off his leg. Nothing visually set a good tone for me in this game.
No, in the one time that I did feel confident was when they were down, you know, in the beginning of the third quarter, midway through the third quarter, when they were down over 20 points and then they cut it to 14. I was like, okay, you know, they're playing within themselves. They really, you know, spread, taking their time. Rozier was probing. Tatum was isoing and he was putting the ball in the bucket. And then Baines fouls Thon Maker on a 3-point shot. Marcus Morris gets a technical. Brad takes them out of the zone, takes Tatum out of the game, and shit hit the fan. And it's stuff like that. You know, I think Brad's an incredible coach. I think he's coach of the year. But sometimes I feel like he does the Belichickian thing and he overcoaches. He does like too much when things are going good and you try to make the move to capitalize on it. But like Tatum was playing well in the first half of the third quarter and then he's just out of the game. And I get it. He's 20 years old. It's a playoff game, whole new environment, whatever. If you don't want to play him a ton of minutes, that's fine. I get that. But he's a starter. He's out there for a reason. And then the zone defense was working. And obviously the zone isn't going to work for a whole quarter in the NBA. But there's just little things like that. But to hit my point when my first statement, I said I'm frustrated with Brad tonight, is that Jaylen Brown only got nine shots. He scored 30 points in game two. He's proven to be one of our most effective offensive players in the second half of the season and in the playoffs so far, and he only got nine shots. Played 29 minutes and had nine shots. And I know we've talked about this a million times, and whether it's Brown's fault or Brad's fault or whoever's fault, getting him nine shots 2 days after he scores 30 in a playoff game isn't acceptable.
Well,
4-1-3.
To me, Taylor, the only thing, though, is he did, like, right after, I don't know if it was in the first or second quarter, but I vividly remember it was at a point in the game when it was getting away from the Celtics and they were down 20, and Brad called a set for Jaylen Brown out
right.
of the timeout.
I get that, but then it just goes away. It's been happening all season long.
Is
Jaylen goes on
that,
these runs and then he
things,
disappears.
Though, is that one of those things, though, where it's like, it's Jaylen, is it Jaylen's, like, is it his fault, though, for not being aggressive enough? Like, I feel like the Celtics, too, because they were so dysfunctional with the turnovers, they couldn't get out in transition as much. And that Jaylen Brown is
great.
Sure. He's in transition. You know what I mean? So
yeah, no, I agree 100%. And I think it's just these are my frustrations from the season spilling over now. But Jaylen always goes on these runs where he looks like the player we want him to be, and then he just disappears. And whether that means he's, you know, standing in the corner or even off the floor, he just disappears. And obviously, I'm not in the huddle. I'm not in the locker room. I don't know whose fault it is. I don't know if it's Jaylen's fault. I don't know if it's Brad's fault. I don't know whose fault it is. But it's super, super frustrating to see a guy who scored 30 points 2 days ago shoot the ball nine times, especially when, you know, he put the ball in the – he was 4-for-9 from the field and hit 1-3 and then pretty much didn't do anything else. And again, I don't know whose fault that is. It obviously, no one played well tonight, so it's probably foolish for me to be focusing my frustration at this one point. But I think it's just a trend I saw all season, and it's frustrating to see it spill over in the playoffs when you're down by 20. Why not have Jaylen, you know, get 15 shots instead of nine?
It's hard to establish that offensive rhythm when open shots aren't falling, and
for
that
sure.
That was an issue for him too tonight, turnovers as well. And as we know, when things aren't going his way, sometimes he can get out of his game a little bit. And
he
on the defensive end,
just so you know,
I'm looking at game one still. Good call. Well, I should update my take. Or we should listen to a caller.
Gotcha.
413 is with us here. Hello, who we got here? I think we got a listener.
Good talk. Shout out 413.
860 is with us here on the show. Hello.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Who we got on the line?
This is the Scotsman.
Oh, I think I know what the Scotsman wants to talk about tonight. I see you out there on Twitter, man. Who brought it up already? Someone had said Al Horford was taken out of the game early by some bad officiating. And when the Scotsman calls in, we know the men in white and black are going to be hit on a little bit. So give it to them.
Well, yeah, look, I mean, it's late. I'm 40. I'm too old to, you know, do what I used to do for CLNS, like when I used to, you know, go all nuts. But the officiating tonight was absolutely dreadful. Scott Foster is the new Joey Crawford. If the NBA needs to have somebody come in and kind of help a protected superstar look a little bit better and have his team look a little bit better, looks like he's the go-to guy now. And the Celtics themselves didn't really play all that well. I mean, you had bums like, you know, Eric Bledsoe and Jabari Parker and Thon Maker making up every piece of garbage they threw up pretty much went in. These guys are bums that this was like the best possible way for them to play. But in the second quarter, the officiating took over. It's like they swallowed the whistles. You had the one where, you know, it was like the play where Horford got knocked down by Bledsoe, you know, which should have been a technical foul on Bledsoe. And then he didn't get the call on the other end. So that's at least three free throws right there. You had Giannis, it was like a four-step drive. And then Horford clearly pinned it off the glass, and it was blocked as clear as day. But because it's Giannis, then they want to sit there and just kind of ignore it. You know, Scott Foster, he gave Mook a tech. And in this series, to get a technical foul, the way it's being physically played and everything, it's just ridiculous for something like a silent technical foul. It's like, come on now. I mean, don't make it that obvious. You know, there's actually still people out there that believe that the NBA officiating is on the up and up. Don't like, you know, lose them too, because it's, you know, once you lose the casual fans that actually think NBA officiating isn't intentionally crooked, then you might as well just fold your league. But, you know, just so many things happened tonight. The officiating was just absolutely – it was just dreadful. I hate Scott Foster. I used to have a list of, like, guys that I would love to punch in the face, and Jaja Pachulia was always at the top. But I think Eric Bledsoe is slowly creeping up there into the top five, top three right now, because he's just such a punk. You know, he really is a bum. He's done absolutely nothing in this league to warrant the trash talk that he does out there. Same thing with Jabari Parker. He's another Duke bust, you know, bust university. You know, he's just an absolute scrub. And then Thon Maker, I mean, what has this guy done all year? You know, it's the game of his life. And then, and lastly, guys, because I know it's late and you guys, you know, have a lot of calls or anything, what kind of third-rate pissant franchise drops streamers and confetti and celebrates like they won a championship, you know, after winning one game in a series that gets you down 2-1? You're not even like going up 2-1 or, you know, up 3-1. You don't even win the first round series. This gets you to 2-1. You're still losing. It's such a pissant franchise. Everything about tonight was just so aggravating. And I'm really actually anticipating the Celtics coming out and just kind of smacking someone in the mouth on Sunday. I think everybody's going to play better. I mean, everything was just going right for the Bucks tonight. Didn't go right for us. I'm not worried about a thing. The Bucks are just, they're scrubs. It's just tonight the NBA kind of did what they had to do.
Hey, always good to hear from you, man. And we did have to get to the streamers, because I'm not going to get out of the show without ripping the Bucks either, because they stunk for the first two games. And I don't have any doubt in my mind that they could go back to that. They got into foul trouble again tonight, as they did in the first two games. And that was where the door could have opened for the Celtics. I actually think the door was open when Tatum put together those string of shots he did. But I'm a little more worried about this guy. On his Bledsoe point, didn't Bledsoe get back at Rozier a little bit tonight? I mean, he had the unjustified trash talk after game two, but I guess he spun it around the way you would have expected it to be, and sandwiched it in between bad and good games, because he dominated Rozier tonight, I thought.
Yeah, he did. I mean, I don't agree with the Scotsman that Bledsoe's a bum. He's not one of my favorite players, but he averaged, like, I think it was like 18-5-4 this year.
You know, I get what he's getting at, though, because remember the nonsense he pulled in Phoenix, like badly he wanted to be traded there when he was the piece that failed them.
I understand not liking Bledsoe as a personality or whatever, but to call him a bum, I mean, that's dramatic. And especially Jabari has torn his ACL twice. Like, I don't know if that constitutes being a bum either, but
yeah,
Bledsoe did get, I guess, revenge on Rozier, but it's not like Rozier ever said anything on purpose or did anything on purpose to, like, warrant Bledsoe wanting revenge. People are making a big deal and a big joke out of the whole calling him Drew Bledsoe an accident, but that was an accident. And then Bledsoe started everything by saying he didn't know who Rozier was. Like, that, whatever revenge he felt he needed to get on him, I guess he got it. Milwaukee fans were booing Rozier from the opening, you know, jump, which was strange. You know, if you had told me in the beginning of the season that Terry Rozier would be getting booed in a playoff game because he had, like, busted the team's point guard's ass, like, for two games in a row, I would have, like, laughed in your face. But that's where we are at this point in the season. And in regard to the streamers and confetti, if you're going to do it, I don't mind it, you know, after a game, playoff game, whatever. You know, Bucks are a lowly franchise. They, you know, get hype about stuff. You can't go streamers and confetti. You got to pick one of the two. first round game does not warrant streamers and confetti. You want to drop streamers, drop streamers. You want to drop confetti, drop confetti. Can't be both.
Carl is here. eHarmony is with us, though, in the house. I know you got to talk about them because I see a lot of people out here swiping left, swiping right, just getting completely lost, going all different kinds of directions. But eHarmony is unlike any of the other dating sites. They just take the steps the other sites don't, and it's built to help you make the lasting, meaningful relationships you're looking for. They just bring compatible people together, and I'll tell you, it's true. There's plenty of hookup sites out there, but that's not what eHarmony is, and our listeners on the postgame show are going to get a free month of eHarmony when they sign up for a three-month subscription. Just enter the code Garden Report. Stop wasting your time and start your journey to a satisfying, meaningful relationship. It can be fun to play around with the other apps, but if you're looking for a meaningful relationship, there is one app that's built to bring you real love, and it's eHarmony. Use Garden Report to check out for your free month. To another call tonight, we're here till 1:30 a.m. for your listening pleasure. But you got to get on the call lines in the next 30 minutes because I screwed up the clock again. So you got 30 minutes to call in. That's 347-215-7771. And our man, Josue Pavone, is out there for CLNS Media in Milwaukee. Watching the doom and gloom that was. So we're going to hear from him whenever he gets a chance. First, we're going to hear from you, though. 857's with us on the line. Who we got here?
857.
Looks like we got another listener, which isn't a bad thing. Because while we may have two listeners on the line, we also have a talker, and he's Nick Sacento. Hello,
what's
Nick?
Up, guys? Got a three-man team. Is this the all Syracuse team?
Yes, sir.
What's up, McLeod?
All academic team right here.
All academic team. I can tell all three of you guys are brilliant young men. Went to Syracuse University. I'm a lowly graduate of University of South Florida, who used to be in the Big East with you guys until you guys went for greener pastures in the ACC. But can't blame me for that. Anything to avoid talking about this Celtics team. But you know, getting into it, I'm gonna have to side with what I think is McLeod and the caller. I already forgot who the caller. The man Scotsman.
Yep.
That's right. I really can't get Bobby, as much as I love your takes. I really can't get with the Milwaukee found the answer tonight. I think this was a complete aberration of a game. In reality, the Bucks were extremely motivated for probably a number of reasons, personal, individual, meaning individual for the individual Bucks players, but also as a team. The whole fake Eric Bledsoe, Drew Bledsoe, you know, who the F is, you know, Terry Rozier controversy that just kept snowballing and snowballing in the couple of days between game two and this game was just so stupid. But regardless of how dumb and how fabricated it was by the media, I know you guys are huge, you know, Twitter guys. I've been banned on Facebook again, so I spent more time banned from Facebook than actually being on it this year. I think 2 months out of the before this year in 2018. So I've been floating around Instagram for a little while. Check me out, Boston Celtics dot Lee Green, and the memes for Eric Bledsoe were just so brutal that I really think that Eric Bledsoe and some of the other Bucks players, basically all the other Bucks players, because they've been getting hammered in the Milwaukee media as well, really felt like their manhood almost was challenged. I think that ankle breaker on Bledsoe and the memes that remain out of that, these guys see these things. They hang around on Instagram, if for no other reason than to find, you know, models and jump in their DMs, but they see some of the memes because they get tagged all over the place in them. And I really think these guys had the manhood challenge. Jabari Parker was out there talking about being disappointed, not getting his minutes, and really was motivated to play. And the Celtics, just these young kids, Terry Rozier, Jaylen Brown, even though they both have Eastern Conference Finals experience, Jaylen Brown had a 19-point, you know, game in the Eastern Conference Finals against the Cavaliers, where he actually D'd up LeBron James fairly well. and of course Jason Tatum, who's a rookie, none of these guys have been asked to shoulder the load that they were asked to do tonight in such an intense atmosphere, a very hostile atmosphere that was built up by all of this, you know, stupid peripheral side controversy, manufactured side controversy, which, in my opinion, is stuff that the media invented to, you know, hype up these games in a series that looked like it might be almost over. I said Celtics in six to begin with. I still think Celtics in six, and I'm going to tell you exactly why. Morris Brown and Rozier aren't going to go 8 for 24. That's 30%, or somewhere around there. I was never that good at math, but around 30%. Again, Morris just doesn't do that multiple games in a row. Rozier maybe, because Rozier is still slightly inconsistent. But I think Jaylen Brown's going to come back with a better game. I think Marcus Morris is definitely going to come back with a better game. And even though Terry Rozier had, I think, 5 turnovers, especially early in the game, he still had 9 assists, and I think he wasn't ready, not just for the intensity, but they were throwing traps and you know, an extra man out quickly as he brought the ball up, and just wasn't ready for that. I think they'll be more prepared. Brad Stevens is a master at adjustments, a master doing those things. And if you look at the Milwaukee Bucks, during the regular season, they were 17th in defensive rating and in team defensive rating in the league out of 30 teams. Here in the playoffs, they're 12th out of 16. This was a complete aberration. They're not going to kill the Boston Celtics, as inexperienced as they may be, the way they did tonight. And even as long and as, you know, as well as they fill the gaps and kind of suffocate other teams at their length, it's just not going to happen again. I've watched Thon Maker. I know Bobby Manning. Excellent performance. I actually like Thon Maker. Thon Maker was one of those guys, when people were talking about Dragon Bender a couple of years ago, I said, nah. I said, Thon Maker is the Sudanese Dragon Bender, and he's even better. I used to teach at a school that had a lot of prep athletes, and some of them played AAU ball with Thon Maker. I'm that old that I could teach kids that are, you know, they played some. And they put me on to Thon Maker, and I watched some of his high school highlights and saw just how well he could handle the ball. The way he did that Euro step and drew the foul, I know he can do that. But if you look at his stats, his regular season stats, he just doesn't do that. Even per 36 minutes, he only averages a block and a half. Even per 36 minutes, he only averages 6 rebounds and 10 points. So this, like Munger said, like the Mad Scotsman said, was absolutely the game of Thon Maker's life, and I don't think he's going to have a game like that again, especially with Brad Stevens now aware, because it's not, you know, he only played something like 17 minutes per game in the regular season, and only we saw he didn't play anything at all the first 2 games of this series. This is kind of like, what's his name, Punty, whatever the coach's name for Milwaukee Bucks, kind of just said, everybody that ain't done shit for the first 2 games of this series, just jump in there and do something, you know, show me why I should be playing you, like Jabari Parker, like Thon Maker, like Dellavedova, who's just a real asshole. I can't stand Dellavedova either. As much as I don't like Eric Bledsoe, Dellavedova just another guy who was all over the Boston Celtics and was just allowed to get away with it for most of the game, just like they were allowed to basically violate Al Horford every time they got in the paint. But I really think, just to, you know, wrap up this monologue here, I don't think this is the Bucks finding an answer. They may still win game 4. That's a complete possibility. They have a possibility to win the series, obviously. But this is not some answer. The Boston Celtics aren't going to have as terrible a game, and the Milwaukee Bucks just aren't disciplined enough or really have the coach to be able to sustain this type of intensity. What the intensity and the level of shots that they hit tonight is not something that's easily done. And I think that it's just not going to be able to carry out for the next, what is it now, the series is now 2-1, to win 3 of the next 4 games. I just don't see that happening. I just don't see it happening. I think
Well, let me get into that a little bit, because number of good points right there. That he's trying to paint there, guys, is that Milwaukee hasn't found something. They just had an aberration of a game today. And I heard you guys getting into that as well, too. So it seems like he's siding with you guys on this one. I think they did, though. Because you look at the scoreboard, it's 116-92. So obviously you say, all right, Milwaukee scored way more points than they're ever going to otherwise. But even if they score 100, they win that game fairly you know, handily. And that's my point coming out of this one, is that they found a defensive alignment that finally threw the Celtics off, because a lot of people were concerned about the Celtics going into the playoffs. And why? Because so much of your offense got gutted. So now your offensive depth is gone. You're relying on guys who haven't been relied on before to lead the offense. And tonight is what would have concerned you going into the series. We probably would have thought that the Celtics would have looked something closer to this going into the postseason, given what they were working with. And that could continue. You know, maybe the Bucks aren't turning it into a million points. Maybe Thon Maker's hitting zero threes and they'll win this.
I think
they might win it, but – oh, go, Taylor.
No, go for it.
I was going to say, Bob, they might win it, but I don't think it's as convincingly as you think. I genuinely think that every time the Celtics had a run, like I kind of said at the top of the show, it was thwarted by something that just you're not used to seeing, which is Thon Maker hitting shots or Jabari Parker all of a sudden having this renaissance. Look, if the Celtics are going to lose game four, it's going to be because Giannis is going to play much better than 19 points and 5 boards with 6 assists, and you're going to have Middleton go off even more. I really think that those two guys are the only legit guys that are going to be able to attack Brad Stevens-led defense if this thing goes now at least five and now potentially six, assuming that the Bucks maybe get one more game. But my thing really is that Middleton is such a fluid player to me. His game has so much, he has such a great way. Like, I think an interesting take, Hubie Brown said it during the game. He almost reminds you of, like, a poor man's DeMar DeRozan, and it's kind of a perfect compliment to Giannis. If you could get a point guard that was a little bit more passive to Bledsoe is, I could totally see, like, a Rondo fitting in there if Rondo wants to continue kind of his going around to every team and playing with every big guy in the league. He should go play with Giannis. I think that would be, and if you threw Rondo on the Bucks in this type of series, I think that Rondo would be a much better type of compliment, or any type of point guard, even a Ricky Rubio type point guard who's more passive. I think
even
the
Malcolm Brogdon,
that. I think
at full strength, I think he'd be looking pretty good in this scenario, and that concerns me too out there. The fact that he's getting more involved, he's starting now. Because, Eric Bledsoe wasn't getting it done at point guard. And even tonight, the ball duties were moving away from him a little bit, even though he was able to get a little bit of offense going. And he actually went down with fouls early in this game. I'm not talking about their offense. Like, the Celtics could very well lose these games playing good defense and just bringing the offenses back to where you would expect them to be. That's why I'm coming out of this one fearful that the Celtics, say the Bucks go back to normalcy. I think you might have seen the Celtics go back close to what they're normally going to be, too, on the offensive end, because what they were doing in games 1 and 2 on the offensive end were pretty ridiculous. I mean, we haven't really seen Jaylen Brown reach the 30-point plateau throughout his career to this point. And Taylor, you're big on him, but you're probably not going to get another Jaylen Brown 30-point game in this series.
No, I mean, you're right. I mean, tonight the Celtics offense was like a J. Cole album, pretty slow with not very many bright spots. But
oh my god.
Yeah, no, I'm talking spicy tonight.
You were waiting to do that. Oh my god.
Oh, I've been sitting on that for 45 minutes.
He wrote it down.
No, that was off the top. No, but like, you're not going to get another Jaylen Brown 30-point night if he shoots the ball 9 times. When he scored 30 points, he went 12 of 22. And I'm not saying he needs to take 22 field goals. That's not what I'm saying at all. But you can't have one of your top three offensive options shooting 9 times in a playoff game, no matter what. Like, that just can't happen. Marcus Morris isn't going to have the off night that he did tonight. Terry Rozier, obviously, Cicento and the Scotsman pointed out some inconsistency with him. I don't see that as much, especially the second half of this season. You're not going to have another egg from him. He's not going to lay another egg. Al Horford, like you said earlier in the show, Bob, it was like there was a cover on the basket, because every post-up that Al or Greg Monroe had, they couldn't – like, they were getting to their spots that they normally do and just missing that baby hook every single time. And that's not going to happen again. Do I think the Celtics are an offensive juggernaut without Kyrie? No, not even close. But they've got talented offensive players who have shown – that they can beat the length of the Bucks in multiple different ways. They can shoot over it. They can get to the rim. You know, they can drive and kick. They can do a bunch of different things. But in order for them to do a bunch of different things, you have to give them the opportunity. And when Jason Tatum's on a run in the middle of the third quarter, he can't come out of the game. And I love Brad Stevens. I really do. And I'm not as basketball savvy as maybe obviously the people who know what's going on are. But it seems to me like every time a player run, they're just taken out. And it's so frustrating. And I wish that the playoffs that the Celtics are playing with pretty much house money, that you just let the two young guys go. You let them get their 15 shots a game and you live with it. Obviously tonight is a different circumstance. The Bucks came out of the gates firing, just kicking the hell out of the Celtics. And that when you get punched in the mouth, you know, your plan goes out the window. So I hope on Sunday, what's up?
Let's get into it with Stevens a little bit here, because I hear, you know, people saying out there, he's going to adjust and he very well may. Wouldn't put it past him. He's coached an amazing year. He's the coach of the year, as we all agree on. But he didn't have an answer to change this tonight. And the answer, one of the many answers I saw was Monroe Baines, and that was not helping at all.
Oh, Bob,
and I know he doesn't have many.
No,
I know he doesn't have many options,
that,
but yeah.
No, just adding to it, when you said Monroe Baines, I wanted to get to that. That lineup with Monroe and Baines, and then they had Morris at the three with Brown and Terry, I had a headache watching that, because Monroe would get it inside and he would just turn it over. He had five turnovers. It was so sloppy. Like, you really – the way this game was going, Baines should not have played 30 minutes. Like, it's just way too many minutes. I really think that – I get that he needed to play some just because of the length of Milwaukee, but I would have liked to see like Semi play more tonight, because Semi's got that beefy body that, like, yeah, he might be a little bit
under. That thick jack frame, boy.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's not obviously that tall. He's what, 6'8", but he's thick enough and he's strong enough that he can bang with some of these bodies on the Bucks. Like, you need that kind of switch up, and I think that's something I would much rather see out of Brad tonight, the decision he would make, than, like Taylor said, kind of in a college vibe, taking off a guy when he's in a rhythm for something kind of dumb, or maybe taking out Morris for something that kind of petty. I don't know. I think that it's Stevens, almost sometimes you're watching and it's like a dad for the first time going through certain situations with the son. It's like, okay, how hard do I yell at him here? When he throws up for the first time from drinking, how hard do I go at him? It's like when Jaylen Brown messes up in a big playoff game, how hard, or you know, Jason Tatum, I don't know. That's kind of the vibe
Taylor.
I get sometimes from Stevens, because he's so good with the X's and O's, but sometimes he does stuff that makes you question. Taylor, do you agree?
Yeah.
We just heard Bino in long form explain dad Brad Stevens and the thick jack chain.
I know.
So there you go. That's what
I know.
You come here for.
That's exactly why you tune in to the CLNS Celtics Post Game Show. Listen, I'm not going to sit here and complain about Brad Stevens over and over. I think it's more so because I'm a huge Jaylen fan, and I see the potential, and I see him have these games where when he gets the opportunity, he capitalizes. So it really frustrates me when his opportunities are limited, especially like the Celtics are essentially playing with house money. That being said, I'm not going to sit here and complain about the Celtics came out flat tonight. They got their doors blown off from the opening jump. And there was nothing about it. I don't know if any change would have helped them tonight. This is a game that you got to put in your back pocket, watch film the next couple of days, and be ready for Sunday and make the adjustments to them. Get ready for Thon Maker to be a monster in the paint. Even if not, you got to be prepared for it at this point, and you got to be ready for all five guys to be hitting threes. Giannis hit, what, three threes tonight? I've made fun of him for 4 years for not being able to shoot a basketball. And tonight he was just pulling threes, like, just with a fluid shot and just like nothing but net. You know, this is a game you just gotta, it's like when in the finals, when the Warriors just the Cavs, you know, take it on the chin, go back and, you know, obviously they don't come back and win the series all the time, but they normally play better the next game. And I expect that from the Celtics and Brad Stevens.
Well, what we do know is 66% of men are going to lose their hair by 35. So you got to get ahead of that before it's too late.
You probably will too, Bob.
That's the most important fact you're going to learn here tonight. And no. But if I do, I'm going to go to 4hims.com. the one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and sexual wellness for men. They got the well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions that help you keep your hair, and it's real doctors and medical-grade solutions, so none of the nonsense, and it's easy. You just answer a few quick questions, and the doctor's going to give you what you need. So, order now. Our listeners are going to get a trial month of Hims for $5 today while supplies last. See their website for full details, and that is forhims.com, forhims.com/report. Go to forhims.com/report for $5 off the trial. We have time here. So 347-215-7771. You got to get on before 1 a.m. Eastern because I am tired. But we're also going to hear from Josue Pavone tonight, so I'm going to stay up just a little bit longer because Josue is one of my favorites. I host here on the CLNS post-game show for many years, but we haven't heard from him for a while because he's inside listening to everything that's said on the team. So he's going to give us the insight from Milwaukee whenever he calls in. But first, I'm going to say this. You can't have it both ways. Brad Stevens has gotten the Celtics to where they are now, going deep into his bench, keeping those guys engaged. That's what he was continuing to do tonight by going to those guys for certain points. And he has definitely made the adjustments needed since all the players went down. So we know he can do that. But if he didn't coach great in tonight's game, you know, you didn't like his adjustments in tonight's game, as I'm sure all of us didn't. Do you trust he's going to be able to do it going forward? Because, you know,
yes,
this is what the Bucks are going to be able to stick with. You
maybe
know, now they know that Maker's going to be able to protect the paint and be just something lurking in the Celtics' head, because he wasn't the only one blocking shots out there tonight, far from Middleton, from Zeller even, from Bledsoe, all out on the perimeter, one from Tony Snell. So they had 13 blocks. I mean, that's inherently going to change the series. We've seen this before with the Celtics. We're against tough defense, all you Rajon Rondo people out there who said if he never went down, the Celtics would have lost that series last year. Well, the one thing I'll give you is that the Bulls are playing that kind of defense that just completely dismantles an offense. That's what I saw out there tonight. I'm going to keep sticking to that, Taylor.
No, I think you're wrong. I think we just disagree on the magnitude of the Milwaukee made, because like the Scotsman and Nick said, and if Josue gets on, you know, I'm asking about this. I do think the emotions got the better of the Celtics tonight. I think the Bucks came out so hot, so hard, and kind of took the Celtics, caught the Celtics off guard. I mean, from like, I was pissed in the first quarter and throughout the entire game. And, you know, Terry Rozier was visibly frustrated with some stuff. And Jalen and Jason disappeared for stretches. I think the emotions got the best of them. And they'll be better prepared for that Sunday than they were tonight.
Yeah, I think that Bledsoe's the type of guy that he needs to, like, he's that guy when you play pickup that he needs to just talk smack because it gets him going. Like, that was Bledsoe. Like, he was, like, pumping up the crowd, like, 6 minutes into the game over like a loose ball. It's like, okay, like he's obviously way more pumped up than anybody in the Celtics is. And I think that's what kind of got Milwaukee up. They had a comfortable lead, and then guess what? They just added on with these kind of outlier runs by individuals, whether it be Parker answering in the middle of the third with his mini run, or Middleton with Maker hitting all those threes, and then Middleton kind of finished it off in the fourth. But and Middleton's not obviously an outlier, but the first two I was talking about with Parker and Maker, they obviously barely had an effect on the series until tonight. So I genuinely think that's kind of why this game was so weird, because you saw, like Taylor said, a huge kind of spurt in the beginning, and then when the Celtics had any sign of life, it was a random guy stepping up that you didn't expect. So I'm definitely, maybe I'm, if we're making a scale, I'm like very, very optimistic after this one. Taylor's kind of a little bit leaning towards me, and then Bobby, you're kind of opposite. You think that this is ring the sirens for an emergency, but we'll see game four. That's a huge game. Obviously, it's dumb to say it. Like, obviously, if it's 2-1 in the series, game four is extremely important because you're it's either going to be 3-1 or 2-2. But, like, just for this series, even if the Celtics squeak out a squeak out a win, like, if the Bucks play well, that's still scary because the fact that the Bucks played this well tonight. So I think it really depends on the vibe that the Bucks give off on Sunday, excuse me.
Right. One thing for sure is that we were all just a little bit dumb for thinking the series was over. And I thought it was over, and I don't think you would have been wrong to think it was over. But we see as recently as last year what a 2-0 lead means. Cleveland went up 2-0 on the Celtics, and that series still went to a tough game 4. And the better examples are that the Celtics went up 2-0 against the Wizards. That series goes 7. And they go down 0-2 to the Bulls last year and end up winning in 6. So those 2-0 leads aren't really indications of anything most of the time. Man, that might just be the case again here. But I hear this talk of adjusting what the Celtics are going to do going forward. What's going to be the next step off of this, Taylor?
As of an adjustment for Sunday?
Yeah.
I think you just try to get back to be better mentally prepared, ready to face that away crowd, and then just try to play within yourself because I think teams have these kind of games where it feels like there's a cover on the basket and you just can't make a shot. That might happen Sunday, that might not. You know, if it happens again Sunday, they have to be better prepared to really lock in on defense and create offense another way. And not just, throw the ball to Monroe, have him turn it over, have Terry Rozier dribble through his legs a couple times, wrap it around his back, try to split a double team, then, boot it to Giannis or whatever. You have to be better prepared to deal with adversity, but also expect that they're not going to miss as many shots as they did 2 games in a row.
Woo! It's Friday night on campus. We hear that.
Oh, yeah.
Bino. You were talking adjustments too. So anything a little more concrete than what Taylor was talking about there?
I would say a specific example, and I kind of hinted at it earlier, you need to play Baines less, and I would love to see Semi get some better run. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of tough because you would want to see Smart and Semi kind of thrown in at different points because they kind of have that same vibe of, shooting's not great, but they play great D and they're athletic and they can get out in transition. But obviously you don't have Smart, so it's really tough looking at that bench because maybe you do need Baines to play some just because they're so thin. Because like you said, you can't play Yabusele, you can't play Nader in very legit minutes. And Larkin just didn't do it for me tonight, Bob. I mean, he was at minus 19 for the game. That was the second worst on the team to Morris's minus 20. Larkin just has had a tough series.
Watch
so
out, Bino.
I would
see you on Twitter.
No,
look out.
I don't have as much of a following as Bob. So when he can't find me.
Don't you worry. Shane Larkin is all knowing.
Yeah, he's got the report.
But no,
they print out, just like they print out the stats and the transcriptions after the game, they also print out the tweets and put it right in his locker.
Mm-hmm.
I see a red light going on behind the glass.
I don't doubt that. But no, all seriousness, I would say, Bob, that you got to get away with, from some of those big lineups that just did nothing tonight. I don't think the Celtics are going to be anywhere close to the amount of turnovers, especially in that first quarter. I mean, I wrote down, I want to say it was eight first quarter turnovers. I mean, Terry Rozier looked out to space. I don't know what it was, but that first quarter was horrible. That was so bad. I mean, he didn't score a point, and he had so many bad turnovers and bad plays. And I mean, it was the opposite of the scary Terry everybody was used to. So if everybody on the Celtics can just kind of go back to normal and just kind of play their game and play within themselves, and Brad has a little bit more of a relaxed feel to the game, which I'm sure he will, because tonight was kind of wild with the way the Bucks came out, guns blazing. I think the Celtics will have a little bit more of a normal game Sunday.
I see a red light going on behind the glass too. Mine would be right relating to the turnovers. I want to see Horford on the ball a little bit more. Just one assist tonight. When he was on the ball, he was just sort of trying to jam himself into the paint. I want to see him back within the flow of the offense again, maybe run some sets. He's not going to get that two-man game going with Rozier. We know that at this point. So there's going to be another way to get Horford playmaking. Nick Cicento has an idea, as I see behind the glass. So I'm going to pull in him here again as we wait for Joe Sway. Nick, you want
Thanks,
to take
Bobby.
A different angle
I was
on the
just
adjustment?
Looking. I was just, yeah, about the adjustments. I was, because I heard you, you know, having the discussion over whether or not Brad Stevens could, you know, make an adjustment after what happened tonight. And this one that I bring up, I was looking over the quarter-by-quarter stats and the half-by-half stats. In the first half, the Bucks outscored the Boston Celtics 58-35. Obviously, they, you know, that's where the bulk of that blowout came from. But in the second half, the Bucks only outscored the Boston Celtics 58-57. So the adjustment was made at halftime, because if you look at the two halves, the tale of two halves, that first half was really bad. The second half, while it didn't look good because they were down the entire time, they did make that run in the third quarter and kept it, you know, within 1 point in that second half. So the adjustments that Brad Stevens did make, and I completely agree with the things Taylor McCloud. I found myself asking, where's Jaylen Brown? What happened to Jaylen Brown in this game? He was playing, you know, fairly well, and he just disappeared. He's not in the game anymore. I completely agree with some of the rotation issues, but, you know, if you're going to look at, you know, the scores and the stats, 58-35 first half, 58-57 second half, and by quarter, yes, the Boston Celtics lost three quarters. They only won the third quarter by 5 points, but only that first quarter was, like, exceptionally bad, like abnormally bad. 15 points they lost the first quarter by. They were down by 15 at the end of the first quarter. They lost the second quarter by 8 and lost the fourth quarter by 6. So, I mean, losing quarters by 8 and 6 points, you can deal with that if they're one or two quarters. It's, you know, when you only win one quarter and you have an exceptionally bad quarter like the first quarter, that, you know, the game gets out of hand. But I just want to let you know that there were adjustments made at halftime that you can, you know, objectively quantify looking at the statistics of Brad Stevens for whatever we like about, and I agree completely with the two big setup as well, but it can be quantified that Brad Stevens did, and I know some of it was garbage time and some of it was the bench players and stuff like that, but they did win that third quarter and they did keep it, you know, they didn't allow the game to get completely out of hand by 35 points,
yeah,
or something like that.
Tatum had a nice little string of buckets through that too. I do remember a lot of those. They were getting out in transition. What you like to see, the pace of this team has definitely gone down since the big lineups have started coming into play. And, you know, you don't want to get too hard on those big lineups because they've been a big part of their success, not only since everyone went down, but also in the series. They were overwhelming Milwaukee with size. So, you know, maybe it is just one night. That is definitely a possibility. Maybe as the game gets closer, the Celtics are able to react and not get completely out of the flow of things, because as I said, that Milwaukee was in their heads offensively. You could see it. They were still getting decent looks that they just weren't able to get to go. And that is basically what this game came down to for me. The fact that the Celtics just took themselves so far out of it offensively early on that as turnovers and missed shots and big buckets the other way, that dunk Giannis had on Baines was explosive. As all that started to happen, the Celtics just had no chance of momentum-wise working their way back into this. Any response to the Nick adjustments, Bino?
I don't know. I mean, he kind of echoed some of the stuff that I was talking about with the bigs and such. I mean, look, I think my biggest thing and really is just getting rid of those turnovers as well. I think Nick makes a decent point saying that there was really just one outlier quarter, and that's kind of to what I was saying earlier. I mean, look, you have that quarter where the Bucks clearly came out firing. They were so excited. Bledsoe and Maker were pumping up the crowd because they were like, oh, my God, I'm playing well. I'm going to go crazy because I haven't done this in a while. So it's like, look, like that's what happens when the team, like the Bucks, comes out firing and you're not ready for it. And I think Celtics are going to make adjustments. I trust Brad enough to make those right adjustments. I just think that sometimes in-game when things are going that off the rails, sometimes he wants to maybe prove a point because the guy misses a defensive assignment. Like today, Jackie Mack wrote an article for ESPN about how Jaylen Brown has really progressed so much, but he still needs to work on his defense, and Brad kind of preaches that. So sometimes,
yeah,
I feel like it's stuff that even us kind of normal kind of viewers that have a little bit of analytics, like it's like things that we miss. It's like, oh, Brad's mad because of this crazy defensive slide that he's been working on with Jalen, but we couldn't notice. So it's things like that too, I think, in the game when Brad sometimes thinks that it's out of hand, he tries to work on. So look, I trust Brad just like I would trust a Belichick or whatever else. I think that Brad's on getting to that level, but at the same time, I definitely think that the Celtics need to chill with the turnover and get away with some of these two big lineups, especially if the big lineups aren't working like tonight. Don't keep going to them. Don't substitute the big. Just throw in a different, totally different lineups. Get the athletes out and running. I mean, the only time the Celtics looked good was when Tatum and Brown were running the break, and that was only for a 5-minute stretch, but that was the Celtics' best stretch. So,
Taylor, you might as well take the final word of this show because I don't think we're going to hear from Joe Slay after all.
Oh, R.I.P. I have two more points. I'll comment on the adjustments, and then I have one other thing I want to talk about. I obviously think there were adjustments. The second half was much better than the first half, and I think that there was just no way for the Bucks to sustain the level of energy that they had, they showed in the first quarter. So I think that was a natural thing, you know, that they were going to calm down. The Celtics were going to calm down a little bit. And all my frustration comes from a place of me being a huge fan. I just want to see him become the elite player I think he can become. And I guess I've been spoiled too much as a Boston sports fan where everything just goes the way exactly how I want it to. You know, it, like born in 98, I've seen, 11 titles. Things just go the right way. And there haven't been a whole lot of young players that I've seen actually get to develop. And so, like, when I see these flashes of brilliance from Jalen, I get so excited, and I just want to see it night in and night out. And I forget sometimes that he's 21 years old. He's still developing. I think Hubie Brown called him one of the most improved players in the NBA 3 or 4 times tonight. So he's still improving. But my frustration with Brad all the time, it's been a recurring theme throughout all my appearances on this show, is just that Jalen goes on these runs, and then he gets pulled from the game, and that frustrates me. So that's what I have to say about the adjustments. Chris Middleton might be the best basketball player in the NBA who gets absolutely no publicity. No one talks about him, but that guy is smooth. He can shoot. He can get to the rim. He can play defense. Tonight there was one play where he got Jalen in the corner. Jalen was draped on him, like all over him, and he just hit him with the smoothest step-back jumper and just splashed, nothing but net. When I went to game one on Sunday, the guy is just so smooth, and everyone will point to that last three he hit with 0.5 left on the clock. But
yeah.
I feel like the entire game where it's just he's a taller guard or forward, whatever you want to call him, and he can just shoot over anybody, and he's so smooth with it. And it's just really incredible, and I wish he got the publicity he deserves.
Yeah, our own Snotty Drippin's big on that too. He's been an underrated force in this series as well. And if we're talking Jalen Brown, Brown's going to do a better job with him. 23-8-7 again tonight. The highest or second highest plus minus on the Bucks, in this one in particular. And he is able to do a lot of different things. Now, 20 points a game this year. And just like Giannis, I think in another situation, as good as he already is, he could be even better, especially playing multiple positions across different sides of lineups. I think we hit on everything tonight, and it's 1 a.m. I want to let these guys loose, whether they're going out or going to bed.
Buddy, you know
Keith
I can't
is fine
watch.
With me. That's right. We added another player to the injury list tonight, and it's Terrell McLeod.
It
He's
is.
He's going to be out for a while.
Yeah.
I'm just out for the week after the marathon, and Bino is 100% healthy. But
went to the gym today,
boys.
I'm feeling great.
It's whole season.
I'm seeing the numbers, guys. You're listening, and I love it. And it makes it all feel worth it this year. We're excited to bring you these playoff editions of the post-game show. I've been all over the place the last few weeks, so thanks to Snotty, Nick behind the glass there, who has hopped in as co-host too for games, and everybody else who has filled in through the first few games of this postseason. Been good to listen to, and I'm happy to be back. So we were going to go till 1:30 tonight, but I'm going to wrap this one up a little bit early, and we will see you on Sunday afternoon. I'm not sure if you're going to be hosting that one. It might end up being, but if not, the rest of the series, and thank you so much for listening to this game show this season. We've really enjoyed it, and it has been an amazing turnout. So if you want to get this next morning, we got on iTunes, Stitcher, all the podcast platforms, and the CLNS Media app is a good place to find it as well, along with all the other podcasts we got. And for myself, Taylor McLeod, and Andrew Rubino, good night.
Keep your third eye open.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNS Radio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.